Stupidity has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupidity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gatz, a man I consider a personal hero, an icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gatz providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gatz's influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupidity.
Welcome into another episode of Stupidity. I made my debut, Stanzik. I don't know if you caught any of this. I'm guessing you probably did because you love lacrosse so much. But I made my debut as a lacrosse analyst on ESPNU, had the Maryland-North Carolina men's game on ESPNU last weekend up at College Park. Stanzik, did you check any of it out or no? What happened?
You know what? I tuned in for about 3 minutes, and right. It's only because of a tweet from Mike Golic Jr., who we're going to talk to in a minute here.
Yeah.
And I remember that you were doing the game thanks to his tweet, so I flipped it on, and it was a blowout. So I saw the start of the second half and quickly went back to college basketball.
So the only reason you watched is because you got a f***ing tweet reminder, an alert from Gojo. You can't support me? Like, if you were calling a college lacrosse game, don't you think I'd watch the entire game just to support you?
I know you wouldn't.
You're totally f***ing right about that. So let's bring on a guy who did watch the game, who can kind of analyze how I did. And listen, Mike Golic Jr. has done a couple of lacrosse games, so I'm interested to see how he thinks I did here. And we'll get into weekend observations. We'll get into Mikey C. We'll get into Chris Cotta, who I did the game with. I don't know why I call him Cotta when it's supposed to be Cotter, but I think welcome back Cotta every time I say his name. Gojo, did you tune into the game on Saturday?
I did, Stugatz. You were actually my trip down on the train. I was riding to New York, and I had you pulled up on the ESPN app, so you guys were keeping me company in the booth, and it was actually a small world because the lacrosse game you mentioned that I did earlier this year was Notre Dame and Maryland, so we had some crossover there, so I got to see you spin, and I was pumped, man. It was a long time coming. I know you and I had talked about doing a game together for the longest time.
Yeah, and I will get to that, because in front of me, I have like 10 options of more games they want me to do, and I think one of them is a game that you're doing, but we'll get to that in a second. Listen, I love you. I've been a bit of a mentor to you. I feel like an older brother to you. And I love your family. You know that. But I want you to be honest with me. As a guy who has done many college football games and a guy, and I'm not going to be offended. You know that. I don't offend easily. I don't offend at all, actually. I want you to be honest with me. As a guy who's been an analyst for a couple of college lacrosse games and a bunch of college football games, I want you to give a complete analysis of my job, as a college lacrosse analyst. Just let it fly, Gojo.
Stugatz, I'll say this. As a college lacrosse analyst, I'm going to put you at about an 8 because you are knowledgeable. You were, you know, you took the game very seriously. But as the Stugatz I expected, I got to downgrade you because I was there for the takes. Like, I knew that there was going to be a lacrosse game going on, but I was there for the takes. And I feel like this is what happens, Stugatz, and this is why you and I need to be in the booth together, is you need someone to unleash you. And I don't think Chris Cotter, who does a great job, and who's the third guy in the booth with you guys, Stugatz?
Oh, you think I remember? Ryan Boyle. Yeah. Ryan Boyle was his name. And Ryan Boyle, listen, he was great, but he's super serious lacrosse guy, you know?
Well, and I think that's the problem is his suit was very tight. He's a very serious lacrosse guy. The game was a blowout, and we needed someone to unleash the Stugatz. So I'm not actually putting this on you, but I want to see the take bird fly out of the cage the next time you're in the booth for one of these lacrosse games. I'm proud of you for going no tie. That was how I knew it was the true you in the booth. But we need to find a way to unlock the lacrosse takes because I know that they were there. It was the middle of a blowout, so I'm sure you wanted to rip somebody for a lack of effort or one of the coaches for not getting this team ready enough, and they just needed to draw it out of you better. That was my disappointment.
All right, well, no, and I appreciate your honesty. So let's say you give me an 8 as a lacrosse analyst, maybe downgrade me to let's agree on a total grade here. Would you say a 5 or a 6 because you didn't get the Stugatz that you wanted? Is that fair?
I'd still say 6.5. Like, I enjoyed the experience, don't get me wrong. It's just that I also know you, Stu Gatz. Like you said, we did weekend observations together, our Sunday morning radio show for a long time. So I got used to a very specific brand of Stu Gatz, and I want the lacrosse world to meet that guy. They met the former lacrosse player, Stu Gatz. I want them to meet the Sunday morning degenerate, Stu Gatz.
All right, so listen to me. Before I get to Chris Cotter, okay, before I get to him, I have a slate of games in front of me, and I just want to see. These are the options I have from ESPNU. I'm very excited. And I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to respond to them right now with whatever game you're calling, okay? I have Notre Dame at Duke. That's an option. I have Rutgers at Johns Hopkins. I have Cornell at Syracuse, Virginia at Duke. I assume you're doing the Notre Dame games. I also have Carolina at Notre Dame April 20th as an option to me. Are you doing any of those games? Are you interested in doing any of those games?
I am interested in doing those games. I was told, actually, right after the Notre Dame-Maryland game that I called, we're going to have you back, we're really excited, going to send you some options, and then they never followed up. So I'm not quite sure how to take that, but I'm going to piggyback off your success here, and I'm going to circle, Stu Gatz, let's circle the Notre Dame-Carolina game, mostly because I have such bad experiences with the Notre Dame-Duke games and the amount of times Duke sent my friends home in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
There's no way I'd be able to be objective for that game, so North Carolina is going to have to be the one.
All right, so let's just pencil in right now with me. It's always penciling in, Mike. You know that. Let's pencil in with a big eraser, by the way. North Carolina at Notre Dame, noon start, 4:20. 4:20. That's a great day for us.
Oh, wow.
Mike.
How about that?
How about that little stroll? And so what I'm thinking here is I come up to South Bend. You're going to show me the rope, show me around the campus. We're going to take your dad's golf cart all over the f***ing place. We're going to drink beers. We're going to have a blast. Okay, we good with that?
Whole weekend, Stu Gatz. You're coming back to college with me, and you're going to live the life like a D1 athlete on a fine D1 institution's campus. I'm going to take you to every party I can find, all my old bars. We might be late to the game, but they're going to have to live with that.
I'm good with that. Stanzik, will you join us for that weekend? Are you in? Will you come with us?
It's never going to happen because you're going to back out of the last minute, but if it does happen, I'm there.
Listen, I get paid a lot of money for these games, Stanzik. I'm probably going to do them, okay?
You're getting paid for these games?
You're not? Stupidity. Listen, Gojo, do me a favor. Give me the best, your favorite lacrosse term. I want your favorite lacrosse term.
Top cheddar, for sure.
It's got to be long pole.
Oh, God. Long pole is a good one. And Lord knows I spent enough time with the long pole back in my day, if you know what I mean. Not so much now.
Right. I never spent any time with a long pole. All right, so I did the game with Chris Cotter, who I feel like every time I see him on TV, he's popping out of his suit. He definitely, and he does that purposely, by the way. He is the new Ryan Russillo of ESPN. So, you work out often, Mike. You're in that gym often. I haven't been to the gym in years. So, have you seen Cotter in that gym?
Stu Gatz, it's funny you mentioned that. Chris Cotter is probably my favorite gym interaction of all time. First off, you're absolutely right. He's got the hardest working tailor in the business, bar none. Right. I don't know how they managed to blow out the biceps in all those suits, but it's for good reason. I'll never forget, Stu Gatz, the first time I saw Chris Cotter in a crowded gym in suburban West Hartford, Connecticut. The gym is packed. It's the 5 o'clock hour. It's prime time. It's a bunch of soccer moms, a bunch of weekend warriors in there, and Chris Cotter just standing there with his headphones on, blaring death metal. And he is looking around at no one in particular. I can see him, but his eyes are so full of blood and pre-workout, he can't see anything. And so I'm just staring and watching him, and all of a sudden, at the fever pitch, he looks around, and to no one in particular, he is not saying this to me, God, or anyone else. Right. He just looks up and goes, everybody in here just f***ing standing around, and then just starts hammering out bench press reps like it's going out of style. It was the most intense thing I've ever seen.
It's also the least surprising thing I've ever f***ing heard in my life. Oh, my God. That is and he was there prime time. Like, you know he's showing off for the moms there, right? That's absolutely what he's – it's why – listen – if you go to the gym at rush hour, 5 o'clock, you are going there simply to impress all the moms that are in that gym, no?
100%. He custom ordered the double extra schmedium t-shirt, too.
Oh,
that thing
God.
Was basically painted on.
I love it. And what was he benching? Do you know? What was he doing?
135.
Stupidity! All right, so Gojo was watching on a train. I don't feel like he was concentrating too much. Stanzik didn't support me at all. He watched 3 minutes of that blowout, North Carolina and Maryland at College Park. My first time in the booth, my first time as a college lacrosse analyst, or an analyst of any kind for that matter. And I felt like I did a decent job. I mean, ESPNU has invited me back for some more games, but Let's talk to the guy who actually called the game, the guy I was working with, the guy I've known for a very long time, and also the strongest guy pound for pound at ESPN. Without question, Stanzik, you would agree, it is no longer Ryan Russillo. It is Chris Cotter, right?
I think Cotter had him before. I'm actually terrified. I'm in the same building as Cotter, and I don't want him to come anywhere near me right now because he's that intimidating.
That is very funny. So let's bring on Chris Cotter. He is great at what he does. You see him on SportsCenter, and you see him all over ESPNU doing lacrosse, college sports, and, of course, did the game with me on North Carolina and Maryland at College Park. Gojo gave me a total grade here, Chris Cotter. He gave me an 8.5 on lacrosse analyst. He downgraded me to a 6.5 because he felt like he wanted more Stugatz in the booth. I was trying to find my footing there. So, the floor is yours. Like, critique my performance. Let it fly. Don't worry. I don't offend easily. Let me have it. Go ahead.
Well, is Gojo a lacrosse guy first?
Gojo has done a couple of Notre Dame games, and I think he and I are doing one. We're doing a Notre Dame-Carolina game on 420 at Notre Dame. So he is a lacrosse guy. He played in high school, and I think he would have played in college had his football career not gotten in the way.
Oh, wait a second here. You're talking about
Mike Golic Jr.
Goalie. Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that. Okay, yeah, goalie's a total lacrosse guy. Yeah, he played in high school if you're Northwest Catholic. Yeah.
Who the hell calls him goalie, by the way? Is that your nickname for him, goalie?
Yeah, goalie.
All right, what do you call senior? Goalie senior?
I don't talk to senior. I'm below his level. I'm sort of, you know, when I walk around Bristol, senior's at a different level.
I got to be honest with you. Goalie junior is rapidly approaching that level. Well, he'll never talk to you again, you know?
I know. I work out with him in the gym, and it's sort of getting like that already. He's already giving me the cold shoulders.
We'll get to you and him working out because he told us a great story. I wouldn't get used to working out with Golic Jr. in the gym because, again, we're arriving quickly at a point where he's going to be embarrassed to be associated with you. Okay?
I'm seriously talking to you about that. That is exactly how it is with senior, and I hope it doesn't work out that way with junior because I really like palling around with him, but that may be down the road. All right, so he gave you an 8.5 for lacrosse, and he gave you a 6.5 for Stugatz-esque.
He gave me a 6.5 total grade. It was an 8.5 on my analysis of the game, and then a 6.5 total because he wanted more Stugatz. He wanted me to bust out with hot takes about Kevin Durant in the NCAA tournament, and I just couldn't find my spots in there because I didn't want to F with you guys and ruin your flow. Boyle's great with lacrosse. You're great calling the game. And I was really just trying to get in there, find my footing, and just show everyone. And by everyone, I mean management at ESPN, so I continue to get opportunities and get paid for this. I just wanted to show them that I could actually do a game, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm actually looking at the schedule for the rest of the year, and I heard you say that you got asked to do some more games. So which games are they so I can ask JV to get me off of those games?
Oh, you mother I will tell you right now.
No,
that was perfect. That was perfect. Hold on.
I'll be honest with you.
Yes.
I was pleasantly surprised. And the reason why I say this is because the exact opposite that goalie was saying, I thought you were going to come in and, you know, being the play-by-play guy, I don't necessarily have to be the straight guy, but I have to keep it sort of, I have to keep the ship going in the right direction.
Correct.
You know, the game is still important, calling the A's, B's, and C's of a game and getting the break and coming back to break and, you know, at the end of a quarter and whatnot. And I was worried that there'd be too much hijinks. Anything could happen. I was prepared for, you know, Levitard's dad to call in at some point in time during the game. Like I thought things were going to happen during the game that were different than we normally experience. But that wasn't the case. You picked your spots right. You were perfect for a blowout game, I thought. You made fun of me just enough, I think, during the game, whether it was me complaining about the weather or my wide stance at the table, not giving you guys any room. I thought it was very good as far as you know, just the give and take. And I knew you knew lacrosse from your college days, so I knew that part would be fine.
Okay.
And the other part I thought was great. I thought you picked and chose your spots right for a blowout game. So I was really happy with it.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, man. I really do. Listen, don't get used to that because I'm telling you, at some point, once I get comfortable in there, I'm going to take a flamethrower to the entire broadcast, okay? I mean,
and
Poppy will be calling in at some
care.
Point.
I honestly would not even care because, to me, it's lacrosse sometimes gets stayed, and you know we're kind of in our own little world, you know, over on ESPNU, and it's not like you know the number of people watching it even equate to any college football game we have or anything like that. So I think we need to be shaken up a little bit from time to time, and I think you're just the perfect engine for that.
All right, well I appreciate that. So give me do you know the schedule off the top of your head here? Do you know what other games you were doing? So I could pick them and mess with you.
I got some spring football games coming up, so it's going to be kind of difficult for me these next couple weeks to do much lax. But I'm doing. Hopkins in Ohio State in a couple of weeks. I'm nice. Doing North Carolina and Notre Dame coming up.
At South Bend?
Yeah.
All right, so I am telling you right now, you might have me and goalie in the booth.
Oh, come on. That would be great.
Yes, yes. I think that's...
That. See, I would be fine with that.
All right, so I appreciate it. Very kind of you. What is your favorite lacrosse term, by the way, before I get to the gym?
It's interesting you asked me because I was watching a game and Mark Dixon, one of our colleagues at Big Ten Network, was throwing all kinds of stuff at me. And I was like, I don't even know what he was talking about. So I always like the twister. That's always one of my favorites when you take the twister shot. Lever pass, that's a new one that I heard Dixie talk about last night. So I'm going to start using that one too.
You would think, Dixie, his favorite term would be long pull.
You would think with a name like Dixie.
Yeah, exactly. That's my favorite, by the way. That is my favorite lacrosse term. Long pole.
The long pole. All right.
Yes, yes, yes. I love long pole. Yeah. So anyway, Stanzik, help me out here because I'm telling you, Cotter, like, I love Chris. He knows this. And Chris, you know that, all right? But there are times I'm watching you on SportsCenter and I feel like you're about to burst out of your suit. So I know you're big on the gym, but I will tell you, the suit looked pretty good on Saturday when we were calling the game. It didn't look like you were going to burst at the seams. You looked rather comfortable, but Stantic, I will tell you, there was a table in there and you know Cotter, gym guy, big guy, muscle guy. You know he needs a wide stance, Stanzik. So if I had to pie chart like the table that we were working at, it was me, Ryan Boyle, and Cotter. Cotter took up 80% of that table just with wide stance. Boyle had the other, I don't know, I want to say maybe 15%. They left me with a tiny little sliver in the corner to work off of. So, Stanzik, I'm imagining that doesn't surprise you at all. The Cotter, wide stance, boxing everyone out, 80% of the table, huh?
Not surprised at all. Honestly, I think Cotter's neck is bigger than you are completely.
There's no question. there's no question about it. There's no question
when
about
goal,
it.
So, think about doing a game with goalie, though. It's going to be that much worse.
Listen.
Just naturally has a wide stance. I widen my stance.
Right. Yes,
I'm not like an offensive lineman like he is, so he's just naturally wide like that. I take a wide stance
right,
so I can keep my balance.
Sounds like you're skipping leg day, Cotter. I don't know. I'm nervous about
you. That's not true.
No, but I love that.
I would never, ever skip leg day on principle alone. Right. I would never do that.
So listen, Stantic, help me out here because Gojo told a great story about Cotter in the gym, and I have zero retention. So let's talk to Cotter about that gym story and get his reaction to it. What exactly did Gojo tell us here?
So I think you're having me tell the story because you're just scared and you don't want the wrath of Cotter to come at you. So you're just pawning it off on me, which is fine.
Cotter's power. Listen, Cotter, just as easily I get on these games, Cotter can get me off of these games. And I'm telling you, I want to do these games. Okay?
Yeah, he'd rip you off with his teeth.
Yes,
So Chris, Gojo told us you guys work at the same gym, West Hartford. He says the first time he saw you in the gym, it's prime time, 5 o'clock. You got the Weekend Warriors there. The Suburban Wives are out there. They're getting a little, cardio in, and you're there, headphones on, heavy metal, cranking in your eardrums, and you're not looking at anybody. There's terror in your eyes. You're looking around, and you don't see him. He doesn't see you because all he sees is rage. And then you look around, and something clicks, and you say, "Everybody in here is just standing around," and then you run over to the bench press and you start cranking on the bench press. He did mention it was 135 on there. He wasn't that impressed. Your thoughts?
That story is so 100% correct until the very last thing you said with the weight on the bar. But other than
it
that,
was 125?
It was 100% correct. Yes, I did. I've had to promise people that I won't throw things around the gym anymore. And I'm getting to the point where I'm going to promise people I won't yell at anybody anymore either. But I haven't quite gotten to that point yet. I need intervention on that.
Cotter, what's the matter with you? Why are you serious gym guy? Like, so what? If everyone's – like, listen, people go to the gym, they do what they want to do. If they're not doing it,
no,
they don't need some guy just screaming at them.
I don't buy that. You can't go in there and waste time. There's a Starbucks right across the street. Why can't you just go there? Then you have
point.
It's nice. It's a lot more comfortable. You got comfy chairs. You can get a latte if you want. If you're in the gym, work out.
That's a fair point. You have
Everybody's way. Like, you're in people's way, and you're taking up the equipment. If you're just standing around or you're looking at your phone.
Listen, it's a totally fair point by you. I didn't realize there was a Starbucks right across the street. What's your favorite workout term, by the way? What's your favorite workout term?
Probably steakhead, because it's kind of like a meathead, but a guy who's a little bit, smarter than your average meathead. So, a guy with a college degree.
Right. Like goalie.
That's exactly right. Paul Carcaterra actually coined the phrase steakhead, and goalie is a perfect steakhead, perfect term for it. Smart guy, but likes to get into the gym and do some work.
I love that. And do you, so how far do you take this thing? Do you wear like a sleeveless shirt? Do you have a weight belt? Do you have the gloves?
Don't ever wear gloves don't ever let anybody ever wear gloves.
But do you show the guns off or what? I mean.
I do have some shirts with the sleeves ripped off them for sure because I don't want anything, I feel encumbered.
And you rip the sleeves off with your teeth, right?
Whatever it takes. Yeah. And if you need to get them off in a hurry, just tear them off with your teeth. Here's the other thing too. You know, sometimes I'll listen to heavy metal. Sometimes it'll be more, I'll even go in there and listen to Air Supply or something like that in the gym because then I figured if I can do the workout I need to do while I've got Air Supply or Seals and Crofts or some type of easy listening in my ears,
sure,
then I've taken it to a whole new level.
But when you go heavy metal, like what's in the headset? What's happening?
It's something like Metallica or Megadeth. I think sometimes the hair metal gets a bad rap, but it's not that bad. Like Motley Crue's not that bad. Some of those are pretty good in the gym too.
All right, and Air Supply, of course. So if I put you, so let's just say we were, it's prime time, it's 5 o'clock, it's you and Russillo both in a gym together.
Oh,
and both of you are, you're working out individually, but both of you are doing your best to impress everyone else who was in that gym. Who's going to do who's going to do a better job? Like who wins that fight?
Well, first of all, it's not we would never. Neither one of us would ever impress anybody else in the gym because that's not our mindset. That's not what we're there to do.
But believe me, it is Russillo's. Trust me.
Russillo will come in there with a sweatshirt on and the hood over his head.
Right.
So it looks almost like the Emperor in like Return of the Jedi.
Right, right.
He's got the whole thing covered up. He's scarier than I am, I think. I mean, I will, because he's got, you can't see his eyes, you can't see his face.
Right.
And he's a big dude coming in there and he's lifting a lot of weight. So you're really like, what? It's more mysterious. What's going on with that guy? With me, there's nothing mysterious about it.
You just let it all out there because you're proud of it. Russillo, what is he doing there, Stanzik? You know him very well. Russillo, he's either taking the gym way too serious or he thinks he's going to get recognized and doesn't want to get recognized and he's taking himself way too seriously. Which one is it?
I think he doesn't want to get recognized because he doesn't want people telling stories like the one we just told about Connor.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
He does. He definitely. But I don't either. I don't want to get recognized. I don't want people to talk to me. I don't want people to make eye contact with me. I don't need any of that.
You just want people to get their work in and stop standing around because there's a Starbucks across the street.
That's right. Either get your work in or get out. Get out of my way.
Let me hear what that sounds like just quickly. Stop standing around. Let me hear Chris Cotter at the gym, and there are people just, you know, they're cutting it up, like having conversations around the weight machines that you want to use. Let me hear Cotter tell them to get the f*** out of here. Let me hear that.
You want me to yell it here? I'm in the with all the cubicles at ESPN.
I'm in the big room
with like 5 million people here. You want me to just yell it out?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, that'd be great.
All right. Quit standing around. Get to work. Pick up those weights.
Yes! Stupidity! Get out of here, Cotter. I'll see you 4:20, Notre Dame in Carolina. Me, you.
I'm in.
Golic Jr. It's going to be a blast. And I'm telling you, goalie. And I'm telling you right now, all gloves are off, okay? Because now I found my footing and I'm going to wreck this fucking broadcast, okay?
All gloves are off, especially those weightlifting gloves. Never wear them.
Stupidity! All right, enough about my broadcast career. In a minute, we'll be back in a minute here with a guy I grew up. I would say I idolized him. I really did. That entire team. We're going to talk to Ron Darling. He has a new book out. He's also a broadcaster. He's one of my favorite players growing up and certainly one of my favorite broadcasters. So enough about my broadcast career. We'll talk to Ron about his book, his playing career, and his broadcast career after a minute here from our friends at ZipRecruiter. Back when I had a real job, when I was actually working, unlike what I'm doing right now, I used to be the vice president and general manager of a major market radio station, and had I had the advantage of ZipRecruiter.com back then, it would have made hiring so much easier. Now, maybe I had that advantage, maybe I wasn't aware of it, but I wish I was, because ZipRecruiter.com has entirely changed the way we hire. It's made it easier. It really has, and I wish I had this tool back when I was actually hiring and firing people. Because I had some of the worst candidates walk through my doors applying for jobs they had no business applying for. And that's why I wish I had ZipRecruiter.com. Hiring is challenging. It really is. Those of you out there who have to hire, you know it's very challenging. But there is a place. You can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/StewPot. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. No, they don't. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. How about that? ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. It is that quick. It is that simple. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. You're welcome at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/StewPod. That's StuPod. That's ZipRecruiter.com/StewPod. StuPod. ZipRecruiter.com/StewPod. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Really excited to have Ron Darling on. Big fan of his growing up. He has a new book out, 108 Stitches. We will talk about that. Loose threads, ripping yarns, and the darndest characters from my time in the game. And he certainly played at a much different time than we have now in 2019. And Ron joins us now, and a big thrill for me as I grew up on Long Island, huge Met fan. A million people, Ron, a billion people will say they were actually at 86 Game 6. I was actually there with my dad, who's a Red Sox fan. So that was a thrill for me. And we'll get into Game 6, 86, in just a minute here. But, Ron, what is the biggest difference for you? Because it was a different time when you played, totally different time than what we have now. So what's the biggest difference between, let's say, the 80s and 2019 in terms of Major League Baseball?
Well, if you're just talking about that 80s team, with the social media the way it is today, that team would have had to go underground and never surface until game time. So that would have been the biggest difference.
Right.
But I think that, you know, it's just a, it's a different kind of game. I think the athletes are amazing. I think the velocity is up, you know, 5-6 miles an hour from when I played. And I think the approach, you know, by hitters is a lot different. You know, guys that I faced were just trying to make contact if you weren't the real big sluggers. You know, Mike Schmidt, Jack Clark, those guys are trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark. But now you got 1-8 in the National, 1-9 in the American, trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, ends up with a lot of strikeouts, but a lot of damage too. So it's just a, honestly, I just think it's a different approach, and a lot of it starts very young for a lot of these great athletes.
Well, I noticed in the new book, you talk a lot about how broadcasters today have to recognize and reference things that younger fans can relate to. Explain that a little bit. I'm interested in that because I think baseball's biggest struggle here is they have me, they have my dad, they have my grandfather, they don't have my kids, Ron. They don't have my kids, and they need to get the kids, you know?
Yeah, the demographic is still as old as it's always been for baseball, and you're right. Part of that is what they're trying to do, try to speed up some action within the game. Certainly it's not going to happen if it's just strikeouts and home runs. There's a lot of things that in the history of the game that have never been done that I think that baseball is still in kind of the dark ages in doing. For example, you know, in my day, the owners really felt as though that if you hyped a player, branded a player, publicized a player, it would cost you down the road with some salary dollars. And I think that a lot of owners still live in that those dark ages sometimes because it seems like the players have to do most of the branding for themselves as opposed to the NFL and NBA where they're not hesitant to really sell their stars. And that's where it comes from. You know, that's the foundation of kind of the inability to really push their players. They feel like it's going to cost them in the pocketbook at some point. That is far from the truth. They should be, you know, right now, Tatis and Guerrero Jr. and all of those young players should be put on a mantle as the next greatest thing. And if they're not, there's always going to be someone to replace them.
How old does it make you feel when guys you played against, when you're calling games and their kids are playing in those actual games? That has to make you feel old, Ron.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the thing that really makes me feel old is that after the games, I'll be walking past the family rooms.
Right.
And the fathers and mothers invariably will come out and say hi and shake my hand. And then I realized, I said, boy, that was very nice of them. Then I realized they're so young, even the parents, that my age players, the player that they watched growing up. So I'm 10 years or more older than most of the parents of these guys. So that's when I kind of go, whoa, I'm getting a little old here.
Are you wondering if they even know who you are? Because I got to be honest with you, I told my twin daughters, and they love the Mets. Like, I've taken them to games at Citi Field, but I said, hey, I'm going to interview Ron Darling. And they're like, who the fuck is Ron Darling? I'm not even joking, man. So, I mean, I apologize, but do you wonder if they even know who you are?
No, well, you know what's crazy is that, you know, there's a lot of young people that listen to the broadcast because, you know, I mean, the rite of passage in a house or in my house, and I'm sure it's in a lot of houses still, is that the TV's on, supper is served, and everyone's kind of by osmosis taking in the game, unless you're a huge, huge fan.
Right.
And the young people I meet know me as a broadcaster. You're the guy on TV, and I've gotten questions like, did you ever play? Like, yeah, I happened to play a little bit, yeah. You know, so I get that a lot, and I don't want to be famous for what I do, but I'm probably more famous as a broadcaster now with Mets fans than I ever was as a player, which I think is a little strange, but nonetheless it is.
This is interesting. 108 stitches, by the way, Ron Darling with us. 108 stitches, loose threads, ripping yarns, and the darndest characters from my time in the game. Ron, I'm interested because we have talked about this on our show, me and Lebatard, and we've talked about it. We actually had Rob Manfred on to pitch this idea to him. Here's one of the problems I think we have with baseball. And you might disagree because you're old school, but in order to advance the game, if I go to a basketball game, I am guaranteed to see LeBron James play 40 minutes. I'm guaranteed to see Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook play 40 minutes. If I go to a football game, I'm guaranteed that I'm going to see Tom Brady. And I'm also guaranteed that those guys are going to be the guys who make a difference late in games. But because of how baseball is and just the randomness of it, you don't get that. Meaning, I don't get to see Daryl Strawberry come up. I'm not guaranteed to see him come up in the bottom of the ninth inning with the game on the line. And so what I have said is, forget about batting lineups. I think the best players should come up every single inning. I'm dead serious about this, Rod. Like, I want to see Mike Trout with six or seven at bats every single game rather than seven, eight, nine hitter. Does that make sense to you?
It definitely makes sense. I'm gonna like compromise a little of what you're proposing because I like it. Okay. I really do like it. How about this as a compromise? If you're behind in the ninth inning, you can bat whoever you want in the
ninth. Love that.
How's that?
Love that.
No, you know, I think being, you know, throwing guys up there six, seven times, I think you still need to have somewhat of a batting order, but all bets are off if you're behind in the ninth inning. If they bring in the closer and you're down by one, do whatever order you want to. You still got to have an order, but you have to start with whoever you want to start. And for the Angels, it would be Trout in the two hole.
Yes, that idea, but I think they should have the ability to be able to do that once per game, meaning they don't have to be trailing the ninth. They should be able to do it once again. Just bat out of order and put your two, three, and four hitters up one time per game.
See, I'm thinking about your idea as we're talking here, and I really like it.
Let's talk it out, Ron. Yeah.
I know. I really like it. I'm going to be thinking about it tonight. How about this? I think you're right. I think that it would be cool to do it once a game. And I think that you're right. You should be able to pick any inning to do it. And the reason I say that is that it might be the eighth inning next year. A relief pitcher is going to have to pitch against three batters, right? Mm-hmm. So if a manager brings a guy, it's a strategy thing, brings in a guy in the eighth inning that you think really is better for you to make that move then maybe you make the move in the eighth as opposed to the ninth to try to come back in the game or whatever.
All right, we're going to have to continue to talk this out. I want to move on here. But and by the way, if you use it on the broadcast, feel free to give me any sort of credit, like you and I had this conversation.
Listen, I will give you all the credit. That way... the people who don't like it will give you all the abuse.
But if they do love it, you take all the credit then, okay?
Okay.
all right, I want to just selfishly here, and I think because a lot of people are interested, whether they're Met fans or not, it is one of the most iconic teams in the history, not just of baseball, of sports. I just want to hone in on this 86 team for a second because it was such a big part of my life. If you could, Rod, try to capture for me what it was like to be a member of that 86 Met team.
Well, you know, I will tell you, I've never played on a team before or after that was like that team. And, you know, there was glimpses of it in 84, more glimpses of it in 85, 88, but it really hit its zenith in 86. And the best way for me to describe it to fans, and I'm not bragging about this, I'm not even proud of it, but that team, for whatever reason, was in such a good place that they didn't want to just beat you. They were not content on winning. They were trying to embarrass you.
Right.
And that is extreme, and this is oxymoron, awful kind of confidence in some ways, but that's how that team came to the park every day. That's just how that team was. And I never played on a team. I never watched a team, really, yeah, that was like that. Now, I missed the Red Sox last year. They won 108 games. They might have been like that. I don't know. But not many teams have won 108, and I'm pretty proud of that team. And that's with I think we had a mediocre September. So that was pretty amazing.
108 stitches, loose threads, ripping yarns, and the darndest characters from my time in the game. Ron Darling with us. Put me in Ron Darling's head, bottom of the 10th inning, 86, game six, two outs, and you're down a couple of runs. Put me in your head. What's going through Ron Darling's mind?
Well, first, before we came on air, you told me you were at the game. Dad's a Red Sox fan. I grew up in Massachusetts. I always wanted to ask this question of someone who was really at the game. Was there any fans that left?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
But listen, I can't blast them. I left game six of the Heat-Spurs series right before Ray Allen hit that big shot. I had to get home, Ron.
Yeah, no, I'm not blasting anybody.
Right.
But I always hear that, you know, like you said, that a billion people were at that game. I always wanted to know, like, at some point someone had to go, no, punt, and we're going to get in the car and bring the kids home. So my story is a little bit unique, and it's in the book, but at the end of nine, because I was pitching game seven,
right?
And in those days, you know, you had 55,000-plus at Shea Stadium for these World Series games. We had 50,000 on regular night, but it was literally 2 hours before you could even shower and get in your car to go home.
Right.
So Mel Stottlemyre came up to me and said, hey, listen, we're winning this game. I want you to get in your car and go home. Don't shower. I want you to beat the traffic. Just get home, get a good night's sleep. We're winning this game. You're going to pitch game seven. So I just threw my clothes on. I jumped in my car, and I was on the Grand Central, like, in no time.
No way.
And I had Bob Murphy on the radio and, of course, heard what you guys saw. And I turned around because, you know, win or lose, when you're going to lose, you want to be with your teammates, right? So I felt, I'm sure, like most of the people that were in the stands, that was it. What a waste. Can't believe we ruined this year. Doesn't matter that you won 108 games because you didn't win the World Series. All those thoughts were going through my head that I'm sure were going through a fan's head. Luckily, it wasn't going through the head of Gary Carter and Kevin Mitchell and
yep.
Ray Knight and Mookie Wilson.
It's funny, Ron, because I would have left that game, but my dad was a Red Sox fan, so he wanted to be there to see the Red Sox win their first World Series. And, you know, at that time, you could bring whatever you wanted into a stadium. My dad brought champagne in. And he actually, I think he helped you guys out. He had a premature celebration. He
no.
cracked that button. Ron, he opened it up before the final out of the game. He was drinking champagne, Ron.
That's just, it's uncalled for. You can't do that.
Well, you should thank him, really. In hindsight, in that warm of heart, you should thank him, though.
We should thank him and also thank the board, because I think they did at some point congratulate the Red Sox on winning the World Series before the third out.
In a weird and crazy game where you win a lot of money, if you have the best Lenny Dykstra story, what story are you going with?
Whoa, jeez, there's 100 of them. I'm going to go with the first one.
Okay.
I did not know Lenny. We brought him up to Cincinnati, and I'm not going to be able to tell this because it's kind of I'll clean it up a little bit.
That's fine.
But he comes and joins us in Cincinnati. Mookie had hurt his shoulder, I believe, had to go on the disabled list. We called this kid up who in single A, I think, stole 100 bases, hit 350 or whatever he did. And he came in the clubhouse, and he just had the most confidence you've ever seen in a way that, you know, like, who is this kid? And And he hit a home run, scored a couple of runs. And after the game, because I'd never met him before, I was pitching that night, so I reaped the benefits of his great game,
right.
Got a win. And after the game, I went up to Lenny, and I said, hey, Lenny, way to go. Great game, bro. And he said, thanks, dude. And, Lenny has like a little bit of kind of a lisp or whatever. But he said, thanks, dude. And he said, how about you and I go and look for some girls tonight? I had never, ever met him before, and that was his first line to me after the game. My first inclination was, who are you? And no. And my second inclination was, okay, I'm getting a taxi, let's go. So we did go across the river to Covington, Kentucky. I can't remember what happened, but it was that was my first night ever hanging out with Lenny Dykstra.
So if I tell you, growing up in Port Washington, my girlfriend got a call to babysit for Lenny's kid, or maybe it was his girlfriend. I forget exactly how it goes. But if I tell you that I get to the house with my girlfriend to babysit, and he peeled off, he had jean shorts on, strings kind of hanging down, no shirt, a bottle of vodka, and peeled off with her on a motorcycle. Would that surprise you?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Not at all. Lenny was a beautiful mess from day one, and it doesn't seem like things have gotten any different. So.
But we love them. Nails, we love them.
No.
108 stitches, loose threads, ripping yarns, and the darndest characters from my time in the game. Ron Darling with us here on Stupidity. I'm going to do some quick questions with you, Ron, and just about that 86 team. Who was the leader of that team?
Hernandez by far. Carter was amazing, and he certainly had a piece of the clubhouse that he was kind of the captain over, but everyone looked to Keith for inspiration and divine intervention if he could provide it. He was just he's the best player I ever played with, and I'm talking about I played with McGuire's and Consecos and Ricky Henderson's and Strawberries, Gooden's. I played with a lot of great players. He was the best all-around player that I've ever played with. It was just a thrill to play with him.
Was Canseco as crazy then as he is now?
Incredibly quiet.
Wow.
Jose was incredibly quiet playing with him. Never had a bad moment with Jose. Always great moments. And I think he is. On that road, just getting a little crazier year by year. But in those days, he was just nose to the grindstone and just peeling off 40 and 100, you know?
Yep. Guy on the 86 match you would least want to fight?
Yeah, Kevin Mitchell. And I will tell you, Kevin Mitchell, one of the sweetest guys of all time, wouldn't hurt a fly, but he was built in such a way that I don't care who you were or who you are, you knew that he could kind of rip your head off at some point. And so you could never make him angry.
Right.
But if you ever did, you'd be in trouble.
The guy on that team, does it go without saying that the answer is Lenny, the craziest guy on that team?
I think Lenny, even though it was early in his career, it wasn't that he was acted crazy or that he always was kind of the buffoon or Falstaffian or whatever. It's just that he would always say stuff that you'd be like, what is he talking about? And then you would laugh. It was never an anger. You just couldn't believe some of the thoughts that used to go through his head.
The guy you'd most trust taking care of your kids from that team. The most trust. Yes.
I want to say Gary Carter first, but I'll say Tim Tuffle. I've known Tuff for a long, long time. We come from the same place. He's a Connecticut guy. I'm a Massachusetts guy. I've seen how he's raised his family. So I would have been right in 86 and if I made that decision then. Just a sweet guy, caring guy, and trust him with anything.
The guy you wouldn't trust to take care of your kids.
Well, we keep saying going back to Lenny.
That's it. We can stop it right there. Dykstra, that's perfect.
or Darryl and Dwight, because, at some point they may not come home. So I think that those guys.
All right, Ron Darling with us. Check out the new book. Where can people buy the book, Ron? 108 Stitches, Loose Threads, Ripping Yards, and the Darndest Characters from My Time in the Game. New York Times bestseller, former major league great, current broadcaster. Where can people purchase this book, Rob?
Well, of course, they can purchase it on Amazon, but I'm going to be doing book signings all next week at Barnes & Noble, everywhere from a book review in Huntington, I'm sure you're familiar yep. with, to Stanford, Barnes & Noble, New York City, Barnes & Noble. So I'm going to be just about everywhere if someone wants a signed copy, but it's going to be just about everywhere that sells books.
I was in awe of Dwight Gooden. I think even, you know, I've heard players say from that team that they were in awe of Dwight Gooden. If you could, do you have a memory that kind of sticks out where you watched Dwight Gooden and you were in awe of what it is that he was doing?
Well, I was in awe of Dwight Gooden, and I was on the same team with him. So right. that'll tell you right. how we all felt about him. But I remember there was a game in Los Angeles, and I think it was his rookie year. I mean, every star that you knew came out because they wanted a glimpse of Dwight Gooden, very much like people look at LeBron James. I mean, really, that's how they came out. They had to see what this 19-year-old kid looked like. And he had a beauty of a game working, gets into the ninth inning, has a shutout. And I don't know if it was a 1-0, 2-0 game, but it was not a big lead. And for whatever reason, a hit, a walk, an error, they load the bases with no outs in the bottom of the ninth, and he struck out the next three players, I think, on about 11 or 12 pitches. Amazing. It was the most amazing thing. When he finally struck out the last guy, all of us in the dugout looked at each other and said, "You've got to be kidding." For those first 2 years, you know, I know it's hard to compare different generations. No one had a first 2 years like Dwight Gooden. Nobody.
It was so exciting for Met fans because your first 2 years were pretty. You weren't too shabby either, Ron. Your first 2 years were great. Man. And so we, like 86, it was lined up perfectly having him as the one, you as the two. So it was exciting for us to watch. I'm wondering, Ron, what do you think of the Jacob DeGrom contract? A lot of people will object to giving pitchers long-term deals, that kind of money. We've seen guys get that long-term deal and similar type money, Clayton Kershaw, Felix Hernandez, and then they kind of burn out. The Mets had to do that, right?
It was a perfect storm. It wasn't the Mets as much as it was, I think, Brody. You know, Jacob at some point last season around the All-Star break or even before then had to have a conversation with Brody, and Brody probably had to tell him at some point what he thought he was worth. And that conversation sets up a perfect storm that now Brody has a different job, and Jake knows what he's worth. Brody told him what he's worth, but now he wears a different hat. So it was kind of a perfect storm of what they, I think they had to do. I'm glad that they did do it. I think it's a win-win for everyone.
I have a cheesy slogan. If all this works out, they get off to a hot start, and I'm going to tell the GM of the Mets that I want some royalties from this. But how do you feel about hopping on the bandwagon? How do you feel about that?
Oh, I like that.
Thank you.
I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Bandwagon Brody.
Stanzik, you thought that was a f***ing horrible idea. You hear what Darling is saying?
He's just being nice to you.
Yeah, well, maybe
it's
he
terrible.
Is. It, hop on the bandwagon. What are you talking about, Stanzik?
Pass.
The
Do you like hashtag Brody bandwagon better?
No, it's not that good either, Ron. You're better than that.
I feel the same way. I feel the same way.
Are we going to see Tebow as a Met this year?
You will see Tebow as a Met if you have the season that you don't want. If you have a season that's not a good season, you will see Tebow in September. If you have the kind of season that you should have, you will not see Tebow.
However you want to promote the book, give us the best part of the book. If you were selling this book, and you are selling this book, Ron, go ahead. Yeah. The forum is yours. The platform is yours. Go sell your book. Sell your book, man.
108 stitches is how many stitches it takes to wound a baseball. And it's also the wins that 86 team had. And each story that you'll read in this book has a path to the next story. So just like a ball is wound and each stitch connects to the next stitch, these stories connect to each other. And I got the idea when I was a young guy living in Tribeca, and a friend of mine owned a bar, and he said, "You know what I need a baseball saloon book. I need a book that I can put behind the speakers, so when someone comes in and they're by themselves and they want something to read, I can give them a baseball saloon book so they can open it up to any page and start reading and enjoy it." So this is my baseball saloon book, if you want to get it.
All right. Again, the name of the book, 108 Stitches, Loose Threads, Ripping Yarns, and the Darndest Characters from My Time in the Game. A little bit wordy, Stanzik, right? It should just be 108 stitches, right?
Yeah, it's pretty long, and the plug was pretty dramatic, Ron. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Ron, what I'd like to do, though, and I'm serious, hopefully you'll be willing to do this, and I'll promote the book every time you come on. I'll promote whatever the hell you want every time you come on. I want to have a summit where you and I really sit down. We spend maybe 45 minutes to an hour, and we figure out how to fix baseball for the kids, okay?
Why don't we do this, okay? You come up with five ideas. I'll come up with five ideas.
Done.
And at the end of April, beginning of May, we'll solve the baseball problem. With your five ideas and my five ideas.
All right, that's what I'm thinking, all right? We'll sit down for a good hour. I'll promote whatever the hell you want. Real quickly on the way out here, Matt Harvey, I'm sorry to do this, but I think Matt Harvey and I get mad. I call him a fake ace. Is he the biggest bust in Mets history?
I don't know about that. You know, I'll tell you, I could not think, double negative, not think about Harvey when DeGrom got his money. Like, I thought to myself, you know, people that are in it for the money or in it for their legacy, it seems like those two things never come their way. And here's a guy that when he comes out to pitch, Leonard Skinner's Simple Man is on, and he just goes about his business, never said anything, never took any limelight, never got in any trouble, and he gets paid. So good things happen to good people, kind of how it goes. You know?
No doubt. Well, listen, good things have happened to you, and I you've been gracious with your time. I appreciate it, candid and honest, and looking forward to the book. Ron, this has been a thrill for me. I appreciate it, and I look forward to fixing baseball in a month or so with you.
Thanks, and please try to tell your daughters who I am so they don't have to say that.
Ron.
The hell is that guy?
I got to be honest with you. They knew who Dwight Gooden was. I mean, they did.
Okay, well. That makes sense in many different ways.
I will explain to them exactly who you are. Game 7, World Series 86. A lot of people forget.
I'm not asking for much, just like maybe bedtime stories for a week or something like that, you know?
Ron, I am on. Listen, the next time you come on, okay, my daughters will sit down at these microphones and they will tell you everything you want to know about Ron Darling, okay?
I can't wait.
Stupidity! All right, fun episode. Thanks to Mike Golic Jr. Our thanks to Chris Cotter, to Chris Cotter's neck, to Chris Cotter's biceps, to his triceps, to his pecs, to all of it. And, of course, thanks to Ron Darling. That was a blast for me. Very candid, very honest. And I hope Met fans and baseball fans really out there just enjoy that conversation. It was a thrill for me, and hopefully Ron had fun. And he pimped his book out. And speaking of pimping, listen to me. You need to download this podcast. You need to subscribe to it. You need to rate it. You need to review it. Then you need to unsubscribe, and you need to resubscribe, and you need to re-rate, and you need to re-review, and you need to do it. Let's do it 86 times this week for the 1986 Mets. Does that sound good? I was going to do 108 stitches, but I'm thinking, Stanzik, 86 times for the 86 Mets. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, Stigatz Army, 86 times each. Show me proof, and if I get an autographed copy of the Ron Darling book, I will give it to one person who proves to me that they subscribed and unsubscribed 86 times, but I have to get the copy of Ron Darling's book. Stanzik, am I allowed to do that?
I think so.
All right, well, I just did it, okay? So 86 times, do it for the 86 Mets, do it for me, do it for my children, do it for Stanzik, do it for Stanzik's unborn children, okay?
Whoa.
Is that fair? What do you mean?
What happened there?
I don't know what happened there. Stupidity happened!